Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way. From design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/Green Festival.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Tim Stenovec on Bloomberg Radio.
All right, everybody. Not easy to be selling investors on China right now. That's for sure. Market sentiment over the country continues to sour, with investors pulling money from ETFs tracking Chinese equities as the country's economic challenges deepen and traders await the government's further efforts to revive its stock market. I mean, the numbers are kind of worrisome, to say the least.
Yeah, we track a lot of this stuff here at Bloomberg. And here's the latest. Okay, investors pulled almost $25 million worth of Chinese stocks through ETFs last week, led by withdrawals from the Xtrackers Harvest CSI 300 China A-Shares ETF. That's according to data compiled by Bloomberg. The fund saw assets drop to their lowest level, Carol, since October 2022. That's in the week through Friday, February 2nd.
Right, and China keeps doing different stimulus efforts. Some people say they need just kind of a really massive one to kind of get everybody interested in the Chinese market. All right, so we are very curious what our next guest has to say about all of this. Ben Harburg, he is founder and portfolio manager at Core Values Alpha. They join us on Zoom, or he joins us on Zoom from Beijing, where it's really early in the morning.
Five in the morning. Thank you for getting up.
Thank you.
And he's like dressed up and stuff.
Much better than
like, was this a 3 a.m. wake up?
You have jammies like, on the bottom.
Yeah,
sweats,
what's going
right?
on here? Thank you.
All right. We do want to point out, you've got the Core Values Alpha Greater China Growth ETF, ticker is CGRO. It's been around since October. It's got about 6.7 million in assets. It's down more than 12% so far this year. Ben, brave you. How hard is it doing this investment strategy right now? That was one of the things everybody thought last year in 2023, China would come back. Big disappointment. It's not. And it continues to struggle. So tell us about trying to sell this investment vehicle or sell investors on it. How hard is it?
It's not been an easy couple years. And obviously we came out of a zero COVID period. So we've been physically and financially been battling over the last 3-4 years. But this is actually kind of exciting for us. When the room gets really quiet, when all the global news bureaus are shutting down their China coverage, when investors are pulling money from the market, when our competitors are shutting down shop, and then when you walk on the streets of Beijing and Shanghai and you see still how many people are there, how robust the trade is, and still how inextricable China is from the global supply chain, you sniff some kind of an arbitrage opportunity.
So tell us,
the fact that people aren't running.
Ben, tell us exactly what you're seeing on the streets that gives you this thesis, or that gives you ammunition for this thesis, because it's not the same thing that we're hearing from everyone.
And where specifically? Is it pockets?
Well, we don't have to be China. We don't have to kind of be China macro apologists, right? I'm not going to sit here and try to sell you on China sustained 5% growth year on year. What we are excited about are those pockets of growth within China that are seeing a huge opportunity. So the likes of Temu or Shein, these cross-border e-commerce players, anyone that does kind of cross-border China supply chain is thriving over the last year. And I'm sure you'll see some of their commercials over the Super Bowl next weekend. Chinese core technology chip companies are doing very well now as they, accelerate that decoupling from the U.S. So you've got to pick your spots, but within those growth areas, you're going to see a lot of opportunity.
Okay, so go ahead, Carol.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say that your top holdings include Tencent, Alibaba, Trip.com. How do those play into the thesis that you're telling us right now? Because I don't see necessarily chip companies in there or those apparel companies that you spoke about.
Sure. I'm talking China more broad macro. Yeah. So Tencent to us is a bellwether for the economy. It's, again, it's ubiquitous. The WeChat platform and all the super apps, the e-services super app that it kind of contains, which includes the likes of Pinduoduo, Meituan. And as you know, Tencent is also an investor in all these businesses. So they have a stake in Pinduoduo that I think exceeds $26 billion. So you can kind of look at them as a proxy for a lot of those names and movements I just mentioned. Trip.com factors into one of our thesis, which is, well, the Chinese are not going outbound anymore in their travel because they're kind of reserving and keeping money closer to home. They are traveling domestically. And so domestic brands, domestic travel destinations are still doing very well. And then Ali is, again, a global cross-border player, as well as obviously a dominant player in China, and one that we think is just massively mispriced.
Where should it be priced? I'm looking at ADRs that trade here in the U.S., so we're talking about 74 and change, but give me an idea of where you think they should be priced.
I mean, at a market cap level, you know, our thesis is that it should be at least two or three times from where it is today. And that's, again, off of the back of its, you know, where it trades relative to earnings per share, the growth in its GMV and its overall revenue relative to its share price, which is now below its IPO price. You know, just the fundamentals aren't there to justify the current valuation. You saw a nice little bump up today, and I think you'll continue to see that as the numbers come in.
We get earnings on Wednesday before the market opens. So what specifically among the headlines that will be crossing the Bloomberg, what are you focusing on from that company specifically?
So we're looking at the growth of their new business lines, cloud, advertising. The Chinese technology giants also all have an AI angle. So things that are more asset light, I think you'll see some growth there. So we're looking at those kind of, you know, as they try to wean themselves, they've even made some announcements about jettisoning parts of their business, their logistics business, their food delivery business. So some of those more kind of handling atoms rather than bits businesses, we'd like to see those go away and then focus on the asset light side of things.
Let's talk EVs and BYD specifically. Curious about your outlook on BYD. Certainly, you know, we saw some pretty impressive delivery numbers, but now BYD seems to be facing some of the issues that some of the other EV manufacturers are facing, whether they're pure play like Tesla or companies that are trying to get into it like Ford.
Again, we really like Chinese companies that have this integrated supply chain. You know, BYD has been actually a kind of a slow grower, not necessarily a household name outside of China, not seen in, you know, the dealerships around, you know, rural New Jersey or wherever you're living today. And as a result of that, didn't have that same kind of name brand appeal that the likes of Tesla or even maybe a NIO had, which was better at marketing and branding. But obviously with the, you know, surpassing Tesla as the world's largest EV maker. And again, our thesis that China will continue to make up more than 50% of the global EV market. I think you'll see still sustained growth there, and they'll start to expand more and more into emerging and mature markets under their brand name.
PDD always is popping up among, you know, either the biggest hit or the biggest gainers whenever there's kind of dramatic moves in the overall Chinese trade. What is it about that one that you particularly like? And I know they're playing in the retail space. What is it, though?
We love their global cross-border e-commerce app, which you guys know as Temu, and I think a lot of American consumers might not even know that it's Chinese built. This is an application that has kind of gamified and made accessible what used to be kind of just within the bounds of, say, Costco or Dollar Tree or Dollar General, so kind of these good products at very low, almost astounding prices, in a fun shopping format. It took China by storm. It already surpassed Alibaba, obviously, in market cap, but it's now coming for the hearts, minds, and wallets of Western consumers. It's going against everybody. It's going to take on, obviously, the fast fashion players, but also the likes of Amazon, where it will go after kind of the Fulfilled by Amazon
group. Ben, is there a big macro shift in how you think about the Chinese trade? Is it much more domestically focused to the Chinese market, looking for names that are going to benefit on Chinese, or no? Is it still Chinese names that benefit globally? And forgive me, but just got about 25 seconds.
We split the two. So again, we like Chinese brands like Anta or those that are kind of selling clothing or domestic goods, as well as those that are focused on domestic travel. But then again, we still really love these cross-border names. So we're looking forward to a Shein IPO later this year. We see that in PDD. We see that in Alibaba.
All right. Going to leave it on that note. Hey, listen, thanks. And thanks for staying up late. Really appreciate
it. No, getting up early.
Or getting up early.
Yeah. Did you pull an all-nighter, Ben? Or did you get some sleep?
Okay. Well, you look pretty perky. I'm impressed. Ben Harburg, he's founder and portfolio manager at Core Values Alpha, talking names with us, which we always like, joining us on Zoom from Beijing.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline, it's teamwork, and it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's Stifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Well, the IPO market in 2023 was a lot like it was in 2022. And that
That's great, right?
No.
Oh, not so good. Okay.
All right. Not good. Capital raise last year was 8% higher than that of 2022. So there was a modest improvement over 2022's dismal year. That said, last year's capital raise, Tim, represents less than 8% of the nearly $339 billion raised in 2021, which was a record year.
Okay, there's a long way to go for a recovery. Yeah, that is some perspective. Hey, for SPACs, it was even more grim. The IPOX SPAC Index, it's a benchmark for the sector, was down 24% in 2023. That was after the 16% decline in 2022. SPACs, fair to say, Carol, are falling out of favor.
Yeah, exactly. So let's get to what this year is going to look like. We're back with Isabel Friedheim. She is CEO and founder of Athena. It's an all-women network that provides financing to late-stage private companies. Isabel, good to have you back with us. It's been a little while, and curious what you are seeing on the IPO front specifically. Let's start there.
Carol, the capital markets are desperate for exits. We in our industry, venture capital in the private markets, exist for the opportunities to take companies public and exit our investments. And there's a huge backlog of companies that have been waiting to go public for years now. There have been a few that came out in the fall, and we're seeing now a number of filings again. But we are not back. And if we take a step back, the markets are actually pretty good. We hit an all-time high a few days ago. Economic indicators are good. Payroll, GDP growth, inflation is starting to come down, and we're starting to see the effects of rate cuts that happened a year ago. So overall, the economy is good.
So why isn't it happening in your view?
Exactly.
What are people telling you? Yeah.
And so I think there are still a number of headwinds. There's volatility with geopolitical uncertainty, and a lot of it has been surprising. So it's been Ukraine, Israel. These were all surprises. There's been, there are question marks around Taiwan. There are surprises in the U.S. on the political front as well. And that creates volatility. The markets do not like volatility. It's a challenge. And it creates uncertainty for companies when they do go public.
But yet you have something like Amer Sports that went public last week. So companies do go. Like, I get the laundry list of risks. We talk about them all the time. And yet companies do squeak through and come to market. And I guess that has to do with, you know, balance sheet, strong opportunities for growth. I mean, so I'm curious, what in your universe are you seeing that you think does have some hope of kind of getting through this year?
But we're seeing a real change in the types of companies that go public because performance hasn't been good. And especially if you look at, you mentioned SPACs earlier, but a lot of companies, and it's not just SPACs, it's SPACs and IPOs, company that are capital intensive, that have high burn rates, have not performed well in the last couple of years. And what we're seeing is the discounts that investors expect and that they have traditionally enjoyed when they participate in an IPO is not adequate right now because performance hasn't been good. So yes, we are seeing companies going public and we are seeing IPOs, but the performance has been poor. And so why, if you're an investor, why would you want to deploy capital in an IPO if you can wait knowing it's going to go down 20, 30% like some of the IPOs have performed in the fall? So you'll hear that the IPO market is back. And yes, there has been activity. We expect higher levels of activity in Q2 around April. But overall, it's going to slow down when the elections happen in Q3, well, Q4.
So you work with companies, right, to provide financing, especially for those companies that are at late stage. So are you having to tap more private markets, private investors, family offices? What are you doing for those companies that are in your orbit?
Yes, we deploy equity capital into growth companies that are about to go public. And there's no question, there's a lot of dry powder, both in the public and private markets, and there's a backlog of companies looking to go public. And we invest now in companies that are enjoying attractive growth with secular tailwinds, that's important, attractive margins, and cash flow. So we have pivoted to answer, because we take our companies public, to answer the needs of the public equity investors. And again, there's a lot of dry powder. And I think that once the clouds of uncertainty lift, coupled with restored confidence, regulatory detente, which is also right, a tail, and I think we'll see an explosive deal market, but I don't expect that epiphany to happen until early 2025.
What brings on that epiphany that you call it?
It's a settling of.
Is it just we're waiting for it?
Yes, it's a combination of geopolitical risk, as more stable interest rates, and then all the other risks that surround public exits and the formation of capital formation in the private market and the public markets. And that includes things like federal spending, the regulatory environment. We're in a challenging regulatory environment for companies that are looking to go public. The current administration has really increased the regulatory burden on companies wanting to access the public equity markets. And that's really throwing cold water on the attractiveness of what is the deep pool of capital in the world.
Since you focus on women, and women already, we know, we talk about it a lot at Bloomberg, at a disadvantage often when it comes to the funding environment overall. So if the environment is tricky, you can't take them to market, or at least IPO, or spin them off into a SPAC or something, does it mean that you're seeing a lot of female entrepreneurs not being able to access the money they need to kind of continue growing their businesses?
First of all, let me say that we don't just invest in female-founded companies. We'll invest in all companies. Unfortunately, that would be too restrictive of a set of companies that we would have access to. We are women leading the fund, the growth fund that we invest from. But to answer your question, yes, unfortunately, it is often the case that when capital formation slows down, minorities are heard first. Hmm.
I want to go back to what you're thinking about when it comes to the macro environment here and about the feasibility of continuing with SPACs, given the data that I talked about and the appetite for SPACs has been drying up. Do you think SPACs are still a useful vehicle?
I think they can play a role for certain companies. So as I mentioned earlier, we now focus on companies that answer the needs of public investors, and we structure products that limit, that provide downside protection and that nonetheless provide protection for investors, but also capital for companies. And this has dramatically changed. So we now focus on companies that are profitable. We're taking public a company that has EBITDA, and there tend to be more boring companies, but that is what the market wants now. So I do think SPACs continue to play a role for companies that have been waiting to access the public equity markets and haven't been able to, and probably won't be able to in the next couple of years, because when the market recovers, we'll see larger size companies go first, better, high quality, larger. That's where the fees are for the banks. That's what investors want to see. I think generally speaking, the banks also don't want to ruin the opportunities to take companies public, bad companies public. And so we'll see companies that are better quality go public first.
Hey, just got
And so
about.
that reason, SPACs continue to play a role for the smaller size companies that want to access the public equity markets. A good example is companies that want to make acquisitions and they want to be publicly traded to use public stock to make those acquisitions. And there are many other examples, but SPACs continue to play a role, and there's a much smaller number of SPACs now that are lined up for success.
All right, going to leave it on that note. Isabel, thanks so much. Isabel Friedheim, she is CEO and founder of Athena, all women network that actually runs it and provides the financing to late stage private companies. So forgive me, for some reason I thought it was all in women based or entrepreneurs, but good to check her out. Ticker ACAQ.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way, from design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code Radio20 at BloombergLive.com/greenfestival.